Ladies and gentlemen, what's happening? Welcome to another edition of The Player and the Fan. I am yours truly, David Noel, the player, the coach, and I am joined by our beautiful, esteemed co-host, Miss Kiara Luck. Miss Kiara, how you doing?
I'm good. I'm hungry, but I'm good.
My voice is a little raspy at the moment. Been doing a whole bunch of yelling on this basketball floor. But, you know, it is what it is.
How's the G League going?
What's up, though?
How's the G League going? Tell us about your experience in Detroit so far and how it's been coaching some, you know, from Washington to Detroit.
That's okay. It's been good. It has been. As a coach, I feel like I'm growing. And that's really the most important piece. It hadn't necessarily translated to wins on the floor yet, but I think we have a group that is willing to grow, willing to get outside of their comfort zone, willing to compete on a nightly basis. And that's really all that you can ask for. And we have guys who understand the value of the G League and understand that they're here for a reason, but also don't want to be here long. So that's really it. And me as a coach, I'm continuing to grow. I'm continuing to sharpen my voice. I'm continuing to improve like what I want and what I see. So I tweak my philosophy. I don't want to say daily, but things that I see that I like, that I don't like, or that I would do a little bit differently, I implement those things into my notes and all my books and all that kind of stuff that I got over here. So, but it's been good though. I've enjoyed this thoroughly. Definitely hope we can get a few more wins, but you know, we'll see.
Okay. All right, let's hop into the last four games before we dive into anything else. UNC went 3-1. They defeated the Citadel, Ohio State, Michigan, but lost to Pitt. We didn't think they would lose to Pitt, but they went 3-1.
They did the same thing last year.
I think we ran this down.
Like yeah. At the end of the year, I predicted that they would go 8-2 last 10 games.
And they lost to a random team. Forward.
Yeah, and they could have went 10-0, and they lost to a random Pitt. And that's just the way it works sometimes. Sometimes a team just has your number. North Carolina has, I guess Pitt and you know, Jason Capel is over there with his brother Jeff.
Yeah.
So familiarity is there, and maybe, you know, they know. I don't necessarily know if they got some inside information, but I don't know. It just seems like Pitt has North Carolina number over the last couple of years. Ever since we took Cam, they mad. They've been taking it out on us.
Well, their last game, which do you want to go over all the games? You know, start at Citadel and work our way down to Pitt,
start at Ohio State.
We'll start. Okay, we'll start at Ohio State. Armando, 28 points that night. He had 28 points and 15 rebounds. Just how incredible has Armando been? I believe this is his senior year, right? How incredible has he been? This is senior year.
Yeah. And he's been spectacular the entire time he's been there. Armando has been the rock, the steady hand of the University of North Carolina. Even when the guards weren't playing well, he was. Last year, he had an unbelievable year. I think he'll be getting ready to be like the all-time leading rebounder in North Carolina history coming up soon. So he is a guy that has come in, lived up to the billing of who he was coming out of high school, and has continued to show that growth and maturity in college. And so for him, I was happy about the NIL stuff, because Now he has a chance to chase history. Mm. Now he has a chance to even more further along his reputation at the University of North Carolina. And without the NIL, I don't know if that could have happened or would have happened, because you have guys, you know, who really do. We play this game because we love it to a degree, but also too, we play this game because we know it can put us in a better place financially and help us take care of our family. So, and the NIL provided an opportunity for Armando to do both, take care of his family and also chase history. And I'm super happy that it's going the way that it's going for him. And just hope that he can continue to ride and finish out this year just as strong as he did last year.
Now, speaking on the NILs, just how much has the implementing NILs in college sports changed the trajectory of how quickly student athletes leave for professional careers?
I think it has changed it dramatically. Like you won't see the one and done like cycle any. I don't want to say anymore. It will lessen the one and done cycle. You will have guys stay in school. I don't want to say a lot longer, but at least until they feel comfortable enough to leave, and it not be a detriment to their career. That kind of deal. Now again, the NBA is still looking for young talent, so I don't know how many guys will leave college like as seniors and super seniors and all of that kind of stuff. But I will say that it puts you in a better predicament to be able to make a more educated decision on leaving to go pro versus staying in school, getting your education, also getting paid for it, and also playing the game that you love, and actually getting playing time. And so I think that's key, because again, a lot of these one and done guys, they leave out early, they mess around, they don't get drafted, and they mess around and they be in the G League, or they bouncing back and forth on two ways and all this kind of stuff. So, I mean, as much as you would like to like continue your career, I feel like the NIL gives you the opportunity to continue your career in the way that you want it to go versus having to deal with the business of basketball after you leave college.
Okay. I totally agree. I think it also further develops them as players, because, you know, usually when you, well, a lot of players, some players get to the league and they're not fully developed, you know, and I think that gives coaches a lot more time to develop players. And, you know, like you said, they're more educated. They have a little bit more financial stability, and they're not, you know, it's not how you say, you know, people, you know, when people aren't used to money, you know, they're not going to the league and you're not immediately seeing players going broke anymore because they're more experienced having money, crazy amount of money for a lot longer than just, you know, plopped in their lap.
Absolutely.
All right. So let's talk about after Ohio State, Carolina defeated Michigan 80-76, another spectacular night from Armando Bacot with 26 points, followed by Caleb Love and RJ with 19 and 18. Caleb Love, mm-hmm. we're not experiencing, I don't know, what's going on with Caleb?
I'm not 100% sure, but I feel like the Michigan game was the last time we saw, like, Caleb be Caleb. And so I'm not 100% sure on what's going on. As I watch the games, it's not like he's taking the same shots he's always taking. They're just not falling right now. I don't want to necessarily call it a slump, but that's what it could be. But I also know that Caleb is a dog, and Caleb will work himself out of whatever he's struggling with right now. And so hopefully in the next few games that North Carolina has coming up, he'll get back to being the Caleb that we're all used to. But in the meantime, though, they've had a couple guys step up, which is good. And so we'll see. We'll talk about that a little bit later once we get to a couple games. But they've had a couple guys step up, so we'll see.
And those guys stepped up a little bit up in North Carolina versus Pitt, in which they lost by only 2 points. But, you know, a loss is a loss. Yeah, I was say,
you said that like that matter. Like, and it's the Pitt.
It
like
shave and no shave.
I'm just saying, bro. Like, we ain't losing the, like, we don't lose the Pit, but we do be losing the Pit. Like, that's the, I don't know, like, that's the, I think that's the new mindset that I'm trying to get used to.
Yeah, I get it.
The lack of dominance. Like we can literally lose to anybody.
And nobody's scared of UNC no more.
Right. And that's different.
It is. You know what? Because usually you would hear players say how whenever they walk to the Dean Dome, just walking in there, the level of intimidation you feel, the aura you feel, looking up and you seeing a Michael Jordan, a Vince Carter, and some of the biggest names that ever touch a basketball, it's not, UNC doesn't breed fear anymore.
They don't. And some of it could be,
Is it because our players don't give fear? I mean, and I hate to pit it, not saying that we have to walk around, you know, big bad wolf, but I'm just saying, like, there's no that aura or that arrogance that, you know, came with being a UNC fan. Just
you honestly absolutely hit it right on the head, because North Carolina is known for not only getting the talent, but getting the dogs that are talented.
All right.
So, and I don't necessarily know right now if we have a bunch of dogs. I do believe we have some good talent. And what I mean by dogs is, and that could potentially be, you know, due to the NIL, like the hunger isn't there as quite as much, you know? So is the NIL a gift and a curse? I can't say yay or nay to that. My only thing is, like, if you think about North Carolina teams in the past, and you think about your Joel Burries, your Theo Pinsons, your Jerry Stackhouses, your Rasheed Wallaces, your Vince Carter's, your Antoine Jamesons. Mm. Again, you have Raymond Felton's, Jawad. You know what I'm saying? Like, you have talented dogs. Like, so yeah, there is a sense of fear. Like, when you walked in there and on North Carolina court and Jerry Stackhouse was coming at you, or Raymond Felton was coming at you, or Ed Coder was coming at you, like, there was some fear to that. Like, now, I don't know if guys necessarily fear it like they used to. And I don't think that we have, I don't think we have the dominant mentality. I don't think we have the dominant mentality that we once had back in the day. And again, that could be generational. I don't want to call these kids soft. Like, I don't want to say that, or these young men soft. I don't think they're that. I just think it's different. It's different now. You're looking at a different age of basketball, and it's just not as dominant as it used to be, or as, you know, I don't know.
And
it's not that.
I was gonna, you know, make this a UNC question, but I think this is any team, honestly, because I can't. Yeah, are these players memorable outside of Armando? Because I think Armando, his trajectory has been insane. But are these, you know, memorable? Like, there's not a time where you don't talk about the redemption year, where we're not sitting here talking about the you guys, the 05 team, like. It's just, with UNC, there's this habit of, you know, we really have, or yeah, we really have a heavy history where we can talk about anybody, you know, and just be filled with such joy and talk about these amazing games. I mean, Caleb did have that knockdown three against Duke. That's definitely something that goes down, you know, it one of the best parts of UNC history. But are these players, are we going to be talking about this team in the joy that we talk about past teams? Like, do we have a player the last 5 years that, you know, we had a Marcus Paige that everyone just loved? Is there a player that we would put on the big screen, I am North Carolina, outside of Armando Bacot? Like, to me, that's the question I'm asking. Do these players go in that model, in that montage video?
That's a great question. I do feel like we have players that are memorable. Like RJ Davis and Caleb Love are definitely memorable. Leaky Black is definitely memorable. I don't know if they go into the category of, you know, the putting them up on the big board, I am a Tar Heel.
Yeah.
Nationally. At home, in North Carolina, in that gym, absolutely. But when we talk about on the big scale, when we talk about the Jerry Stackhouses, the Rasheed Wallace, now again, these guys went on to have crazy careers afterwards. Your Tyler Hansbrough's, like, so I do think they are memorable. I don't know if they go into the, you know, all-time greats category, or if it's a situation to where, because again, like you just stated, Caleb Love had one of the biggest shots in North Carolina history.
Mm-hmm.
Biggest shots. The problem with his shot, the reason why his shot won't go down as better than Luke May's shot that beat Kentucky.
Listen.
Is because they didn't finish it. Had they won a national championship, it takes them to a completely different level.
Yeah.
Like that's, and so that's what, and so as much as it pains to say, because again, you can think about Theo and them too. If Theo and Joel Berry don't go back for redemption year,
yeah,
they might get lost in the shuffle as well. So That's a great question. I think these guys are definitely memorable, but I don't think they've stamped their name on conversations 20 years from now to where their name will come up as, you know, one of the greatest teams or one of the best teams to ever do it at the University of North Carolina, even though they clearly have the talent.
So what does it take? Yeah, what does it take? Like, how does Carolina get back to that pedestal? How does Carolina get back to being, you know, the game that everyone looks forward to, the game that you're kind of pissed off that it's not on TV? You're looking forward to see, you know, players on the court. I'm sure it's the talent, but I also feel like, you know, we also, is it, we just have to get used to a new culture with, you know, Coach Davis and see how he cultivates UNC, because I'm sure he's going to be there for a while. And it's insane to kind of, you know, put such weight on him in year two to cultivate what Coach Williams did. But also, when you're passing down something, I think a legacy that's, is UNC's legacy hard to maintain? Yeah, end of the question.
Absolutely not. I do not believe that one bit. And the reason why I don't believe that one bit is because, again, North Carolina recruits itself.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and I still firmly believe that even now, like even with the change of generation and how young men are today versus, you know, 10, 15, 20 years ago, like I still think North Carolina carries the weight nationally that it once did. They're still getting five-star players. So I just feel like yes, it's a change in generation and culture. I think that's what it simply is. I think the game of basketball is changing. Although college basketball is still way more physical than the NBA. Like as far as like the foul calls and all that kind of stuff, how they play, et cetera. Like where the college game is still built towards defense, the NBA game is built towards offense. So you like, in my opinion, the college game, I feel like you could still be that dominant force, that dominant presence. Because again, it's tailored towards defense, in my opinion. And so when we talk about the culture and how can North Carolina and or how and if they can get to that, it's on the defensive end. And right now, North Carolina is last in defense, but they first in offense. So that's the piece. Go out there and stop somebody. Bro, the Pitt game that they lost, we always do this for some reason. Bro, they gave Burton gave them 31.
Yeah.
So, and you lose by two. That man averaged 12 on the season. And you let him go out there and damn near triple his average? You know what I'm saying? So, like, when are we going to, like, my thing is, like, when are we going to stop somebody? When is the defensive end going to become a priority? And I think that's the only thing that hasn't necessarily for me. There's a couple things that hasn't translated from Coach Williams to Coach Davis. But I'm not necessarily asking for that either, because again, I understand it's Coach Davis' show now. It ain't Coach Williams' show no more.
Yeah.
So the things that Coach Williams prioritized, pace of play. He wanted to play fast as that thing. Offensive rebounding. North Carolina was always number one in rebounding. We always dominated the glass. In this game versus Pitt,
only had eight.
We got like, yeah, we only had eight offensive rebounds and we only out rebounded them by five.
Yeah.
Like that number would have been 60 under Coach Williams. But like, I think that's my point. Like so you got pace of play, you got offensive rebounding, and now and you got defense. Like what are we doing on the defensive end? Now I love some of the schemes that they've implemented as far as defense is concerned, because it translates to the next level. So guys won't come in. So when Armando leaves the University of North Carolina, he'll be more prepared for his role in the NBA or wherever he has to play. That's what I do love about it. Now, is it necessarily working for us at the University of North Carolina, though? That's one thing you gotta kind of weigh. Because again, same defense last year, they got to the national championship game. So again, it's all really still a tale of it's the beginning of the season. We're probably about halfway point now, excuse me. And what can they do? One, to continue to develop the bench, get stops on the defensive end, and then turn this thing into something that is favorable going into the ACC and NCAA tournaments.
All right, and up next in the last game they played, UNC defeated Wake Forest 88-79. I almost thought they were going to lose there. I did, because Wake Forest was playing. RJ Davis led the night with 27 points. Armando followed with 21, and Seth Trimble with Leaky had
18. I was getting ready to say. Leaky talk about had my man 18. Leaky Black. Career high.
Yeah. Followed by Seth Trimble's 11. So Wake Forest is, I believe, under year three under their new coach. And I feel like they have, I mean, it's about three years.
I feel like this is two. That's like three. You might be right on three. I think this is three. Danny Manning been gone.
Yeah,
it's three. Yeah, this is three.
All right, well, Leaky had his career high with 18 points. This is the fourth time in the season and 16th in his career that Leaky had double figures. So what happened with UNC and Wake Forest, and why was Wake Forest so close?
Because Wake Forest is good, and they're talented. They're well coached. So I'll preface that first. Like this wasn't a shocker that this game was close. And shoot, Wake Forest just came off of beating Duke. So this Wake Forest team is good. Like let's say that first. But I think this is where, again, in this Wake Forest game, you saw a couple things. You saw Leaky Black be way more aggressive than he's been in his entire career, which we need more of that. I've always said it, and I'll continue to say it, that we go as far as Leaky Black can take us. And this win was on the shoulders of Leaky Black. Because, again, Armando was Armando.
Yeah.
Like, he did what he did. And then RJ has been that Batman to Robin. And I don't know if we could throw a third guy in there with Caleb. Caleb isn't necessarily where he needs to be right now. But again, I think he'll work his way out of it eventually. But Seth Trimble coming off of the bench, having the game that he had, I was super excited about. And it wasn't even the 11 points that he scored. It was the ball pressure that man was putting on. It was the blocks. It was the energy. It was the effort. It was that from Seth Trimble.
Yeah.
I told you, I think I said it at the beginning of the podcast of when we started talking about the recruiting class, and I said that Seth Trimble could be a kid that cracks the lineup early. And so when you put him out there with RJ, Caleb, once he gets back to himself, Leaky Mondo, Leaky Pete, Leaky Jalen, like that can be a really, really good defensive lineup. You can switch everything. You can do whatever you need to do. I know we're small, but still, like, ball pressure is everything. And so I think with this lineup and with Seth doing what he did last game against Wake Forest, again, the win is on the back of Leaky Black and Seth. And then you even had Justin McCoy come in and give you some good minutes. I was shocked about that.
Came from 17 minutes, 2 points.
I'm a little concerned about everybody else. Though. Like, I still think, and again, I think he gets those minutes because Pete Nance goes out for sure with the back injury, but I'm a little concerned that our bench isn't what it needs to be. Like, I'm concerned by that. And again, I don't know, because as a coach, I get it. My guys, my five are my five. But it got to be like 2-3 more we can spare some minutes for. And I know in college you can kind of play guys heavy minutes like this, because like Mondo played 38. Like, that's a lot.
Yeah.
But I mean, I guess at this point, when he your rock, you gotta rock with it. So
yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I'm a little concerned by the lack of depth that we have, because again, I think at this stage of the season, there should be at least three more guys that can step up. So your legitimate 8-man rotation is there by now, but you know, we'll see, because it changes from game to game. Our five is our five, and then the next three, you never know who getting in the game.
Yeah, I wish. Yeah, I'm gonna have to. I am. Because I think we're all wondering where Dontrez is. Like, what's going on with
You
that?
see him. You see exactly where he at.
Shut up. I was trying to find a good way to say it. But I don't know.
He on the bench, apparently, in their mind, where he need to be.
Yeah.
Because I just don't, again, I don't see how you don't play a guy who can help you win. Clearly, they don't think he can help right now.
I wouldn't be surprised if he transfers next year. And that's just being completely honest. I wouldn't be surprised in the least bit.
Especially the way the transfer portal is set up now.
Yeah.
I'm surprised that he stayed, honestly.
That part too. It's 2 years down the drain. I mean, to be blunt with it, just wasted time on the bench. Okay, yeah, so that was the last game that Carolina played. They play tomorrow against Notre Dame at 11:30 in the morning, a super early game. Can Carolina beat Notre Dame?
They can beat Notre Dame. Will they beat Notre Dame? That is the question. I think they will. And again, but it is going to have to start on the defensive end. Like it is really that simple with North Carolina. They have to get stops. They can't continue to allow single players to have dominant games. I think that's the piece where North Carolina has to kind of turn the tide now. Like it has to start now. How many games are we into the ACC season?
Oh, you're
One,
asking
two.
about four, right?
About four. Yeah, something like that. About four games into the ACC season. So, yeah, I think we have to figure it out. We have to figure it out now because we're 2-2. You got Clemson and Pitt sitting at the top of the
Yeah.
ACC.
Pitt.
Like, who'd ever thought that? Like Clemson has been good. Clemson has been really good. But again, the norm just isn't the norm anymore. The dominance just isn't the dominance anymore. So again, it shows you the parity that's throughout college basketball and especially the ACC right now. But I really do hope my man down Kenny Payne down there and good brother, Nolan Smith can turn it around down there in Louisville
Louisville,
because
yeah.
they are struggling right now. But nonetheless, I think they need a couple years to go in and right the ship down there, and maybe next year, through some transfers, transfer portal, all that kind of stuff, they can figure it out. But this ACC is gonna shake up the look real, real different, I think. But we'll see.
Why?
But to ask the question, yes, I think UNC can beat Notre Dame.
Yeah. Why does it seem like Duke is worse than 11-4? I just feel like they're at the bottom of the ACC. I don't know why, but it just does not feel like Duke is 11-4. What is
It's
going
because
on at Duke?
it's the same thing. It's a new coach,
Yeah.
and it's new kids, and so on top of that, where so the difference between what Coach Davis took over versus what John Shire took over is. John Shire took over the one and done factory. So he's coming in new as a head coach, not new to the program, of course, but then he's bringing in, new players on top of that. And on top of that too, I will say this. He has the number one and number two recruit in the nation in Lively and I forget the other kid's name. Number zero, dark skinned kid. His name is slipping my mind for whatever reason. But number one and number two recruit in the nation. But
Derrick Whitehead.
Whitehead is his name. So the number one and number two recruit in the nation, and they, due to injuries and all this kind of stuff, they haven't necessarily lived up to the billing just yet either. So like they aren't RJ Barrett, Cam Reddish, and Zion Williamson. You know what I'm saying? Like it's not that class. So But with that, though, they have been formidable. They have been serviceable at times. They do have a couple, like, their losses aren't, like, crazy losses.
Right.
Like, they always go to NC State and lose.
Yeah.
Like, that just happens.
Yeah.
Like, Kevin Keats is, you know, so that's, you know, so the losses that they have, even though, like, I hate to say it, is like, that's about normal for them. And so, but we'll see. We'll see how they finish up, though. Like, that's going to be the piece, how they finish up. What bothers me is these jokers always find a way to be still ranked.
Always.
We went from one to unranked so fast. Like, these jokers still be ranked. That be my problem.
2024 commits. We've had, I believe, two commits since our last podcast. Carolina 2024 is currently top ranked with Elliot Cadu out of Missouri, James Brown out of Illinois, and Drake Powell finally began North Carolina kid on the, I mean, you know, Pittsboro, North Carolina.
Drake Powell is from Northwood High School.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So with this, go ahead.
No, you go ahead. Sorry.
I was gonna say, well, with this incoming class, how does Carolina, you know, how well has Carolina done getting these kids in a UNC uniform?
I think, that's a part of it, right? We just talked about it. We just talked about how important it is to continue the legacy. Although, again, I do think it is, and this is me being naive to the recruiting world. Again, I think North Carolina recruits itself to a degree. So you have your pick of 5 stars every single year. You have your pick of 4 stars every single year. In my opinion, I think you absolutely go after the kids that fit what you are trying to do. And so fit is everything. And so if North Carolina can continue, if this is the style of basketball that we are going to see from North Carolina moving forward, then I think you continue to get guards that can get downhill, guards that can play make, a big that can be dominant, and then surround all that with shooters. And so we'll see how it continues to evolve from here. But I think they're doing a great job in recruiting. They always have. We always will. And then it just kind of goes from there. Now it's about how quickly can you develop them to the system that they're coming into. How quickly can we get these young men to understand college basketball? That simple.
Okay. I know that you wanted to talk a little bit about player health, especially with Pete Nance, with his lower back injury. And DeMarco Dunn just came back from an injury. I know that Puff Johnson, I still don't think he's 100%. I still think he's, he's probably at a good 70%. And then the most recently, on last week, I don't know the exact day it was, but with the Buffalo Bills and DeMar Hamlin and him just passing out in the field, are we taking player health seriously enough? Are we doing everything we can to ensure the longevity of players' bodies through the rigorous, the most rigorous thing that they could ever do? I don't think we understand how difficult it is to maintain physical shape to be able to play a professional sport day in and day out. We would never understand it. We would never understand how to the longevity of playing basketball, much less even football, and you've played both. So being a player who knows the ins and outs of both sides of the ball, what else can we do to ensure that our players make it home after a game?
I'm not sure if there is much more that we can do. The Damar Hamlin thing was like tough, like that. That's, but the crazy part about it is like things like this have happened before. Like a couple years ago, there was a player that passed out in the G League and passed away. Mm-hmm. You like these things happen, which is very unfortunate, which is always scary when it happens. In Damar Hamlin's case, like that, the fact that they were able to get to him so quickly, and the fact that he's recovered from the news reports as recently, I want to say as last night, mm-hmm. he is recovering well. Like that's just a blessing.
Yeah,
it's a blessing for real. So the one thing I did say though, when this happened, and I think what this is, I don't know what week this is in the NFL, 17 is week 17 in the NFL. So they only had one more week of playing football. I did say this, we do a lot of physicals at the beginning of each year. Like there are a slew of doctors and all that kind of stuff. Yeah, when you get sick, they check you out. But we do like an in-depth physical at the beginning of each year. I believe athletes in general, we should maybe start doing them twice a year. And the reason why I say that is because, again, like, things just happen. You know what I mean? Like you couldn't, I'm sure they didn't see this coming. Like there was nothing that showed them that this was going to happen. I'm sure he passed all of his physicals at the beginning of the year with flying colors. But is there a situation to where, okay, let's take the NBA, for example. They start in September for training camp. That's when you normally get all of your physicals and all that kind of stuff done. But then once we hit January, because that's about, you know, midway point, January, right around February, right, all-star break, that mm-hmm. kind of deal.
Mm-hmm.
I would say end of January, can we do another physical? Just to make sure, you know what I'm saying? Just to, like, another in-depth physical. And so instead of doing it once a year, maybe do it once, twice a year, once every 6 months kind of deal. I don't know if that will necessarily change anything, but it could. You know, like that was really the only, like, I don't want, because here where we're at now, we talk about solution-based approaches. And so, like, what's the solution to it? And so that was the only thing that I could come up with. Because again, these things happen. They are so unfortunate. But luckily in this case, like, there's a feel-good part behind it where Damar Hamlin didn't pass away mm-hmm. on that field.
First question waking up was who won the game.
Yeah. And that, you know what I'm saying? That's crazy too.
Yeah.
To where he even thought that they'd have played like the game, like the shoulder kept going.
Yeah.
Like, I was proud of the NFL for suspending it. And so I had this conversation too, and I know that I'm getting ready to throw this out there out of the blue, but everybody talked about Skip Bayless and his comments afterwards. And I was talking to my best friend, and he was so mad at Skip Bayless. And I told him, I said, bro, I get exactly where you're coming from, because there was a man's life at stake on that field. I said, but like, there are a lot of people who agree with Skip Bayless and think that the game may have and should have went on.
I don't even think Skip was even trying to say that. I think it was definitely, the timing was awful. But how you read his tweet, he was saying, how can the NFL resume this game at a later time in such a crucial part of the season? Because at this time, it seems irrelevant. Like, I get what he was saying. It was just definitely at the wrong time. Like, when you fully read the context of his tweet and the ones that follow after, he was saying that the game was irrelevant because a man's life is on the line. Because how does the NFL recoup this? Like, you just, it just doesn't matter at this point. So,
And that's, and again,
definitely wrong timing.
And so, again, timing is everything with what you have to say. And then also, like, people, I told them, I said, bro, these tweets, bro, they only 150 characters, bro. Like, you could take the beginning and you could take the end, and now you could just run with it because there's no real follow-up. There's no real, like, debate. Like, there's no real, like, yo, wait, what do you mean by that? Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's no conversation. Yeah. It's just a tweet. People take it out of context. People run with it. And now that man is getting bashed for, you know, something that may not, and again, could have just may been taken out of context. Yeah. So that's unfortunate at the end of the day. But that's really the only thing that I can see. You know, injuries happen, like Pete Nance, his back going out, or lower back soreness. You know, Puff Johnson with ankles and knees and all that kind of stuff. Like, that's just a part of the game. But the DeMar Hamlin thing was definitely on a different level. But it also shows you why they have what they have in place. At every single game, there are EMTs, there are paramedics, there are people there that just in case something like this happens, they can act swiftly. And thank God that they did for DeMar Hamlin. And him and his family.
Absolutely. I can never imagine what it takes to even, I don't see how y'all do it. I would be a complete mess. Like, how do you even continue even playing? I just, you know, I guess because everything is kind of like a freak accident. You just never know with anything in life. So you have to kind of, you know, move along. But
I said, it's how you keep driving after a car accident.
Right. It's scary.
It's like,
you have to.
Yeah, it's scary, but it's a part of life. And this is who most of these guys are. They play this game for a living. They play this game because they love it. They play this game because of the relationships built in it. Like, you saw how it affected a lot of his teammates, a lot of the guys who didn't even know him. Like, so we're talking about it today on our podcast. So, like, it definitely, you know, shocks the world. But at the same time, it's like you gotta keep going. And so luckily the game itself, that particular game, was suspended, but the league has to go on the next week. So.
All right. Well, that's the conclusion of our checklist.
Yeah. I like it.
We'll be back probably in like another year. So I'm sure UNC will have a lot of games to talk about within that year. But we have another episode.
You're right. We will be back later on this year. Happy New Year to everybody.
Happy holidays, happy all New that year, good stuff. Right. Christmas, all that.
Hey.
That's very true.
All that stuff that happened. And it's been good. Been good. Your 2023 been good so far?
Yeah, I can't complain. You know, learning how to balance my blessings and working on time management and making sure that I'm giving everything 100%. And so, yeah, just I got to learn time management. That's it. So one of my top goals in the first quarter of 2023 is learning time management and getting myself in a routine. So,
okay, that's what's up.
Yeah.
That's what's up.
Fix your face, because I know, David.
Nothing.
Get this out. I got a meeting at 10 o'clock. I can't mess with you. Bye, David.
I ain't gonna say anything. Hey, ladies and gentlemen, we so appreciate y'all for joining us. This is The Player and the Fan. Holler at us, questions, comments, all that good stuff. We appreciate y'all. We out of here. Two fingers like a player.
You know, I'm going to put this on YouTube so people can see you do that every time.